Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Heartland Politics here on KBUR AM-FM, Burlington, Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And today our focus is on the Midwest economy and a very, very good report that's just come out issued by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. It's called A Vital Midwest, The Path to a New Prosperity. And this issue, of course, I think is on everybody's minds as we've had an unprecedented economic recovery from the Great Recession about 12 years ago. And but the recovery's been a little uneven. And our region, of course, faces important challenges, but we've also got some great opportunities. And to talk about this report, I've got today the co-author and I think the leading expert on the Midwest economy in our region and in our country. His name's John Austin. He's been on the show before. He's a fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and he's a fellow with the Brookings Institution, and he's a director of the Michigan Economic Center. John, thanks for being our guest today.
I'm happy to be back with you, Robin.
I'm curious, and just for full disclosure here, I was part of a group. I was invited by John to review this report, so I can say that there wasn't much that needed improving on.
You had a hand in it, Robin, for sure.
Well,
just a lot of other good thought leaders and doers from around the Midwest, which I count you among. That's for sure.
Well, I appreciate that, and I was really proud to be asked to participate. It's a very thorough report, and at some point we'll provide listeners with a place to go on the web to read it. We would welcome that. But give the background to this, John, and why this was produced at this time.
Yeah, well, some 15 years ago, when I was spending some time with leaders from different parts of the Midwest, it hit us that we were facing kind of a similar economic positioning and facing similar challenges, trying to leverage similar assets. And that's when, under the Brookings Institution banner, working with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, we first produced this report, The Vital Center, which was one of the early looks at the economy of the Midwest and Upper Great Lakes, its economic story, looking at our strengths and our weaknesses as we are in the middle of, you know, a dramatic restructuring of kind of the agricultural and industrial economy that we built out at scale in the region that we benefited from for many generations. And that was running up to the 2008 election a couple years before that, when, again, our states are swing states and pivotal, and people are coming through the region running for president, promising to do something constructive for citizens in Ohio and Wisconsin and Iowa and Michigan. And we thought, let's try to offer some ideas of what would be most constructive to accelerate economic growth and change. And so, as we all know, since 2016 election was uniquely decided, really, by the same states. Now all eyes, really, in the nation and the world have been focused on what's going on in the Midwest, what are the attitudes and prospects of voters and citizens in the states that we call home. You know, I'm from Michigan. And so we wanted to kind of update the picture and the analysis of where is the Midwest economy and how do we understand it to get past what is an unfortunate new perception or newly born that this is somehow a region of, you know, declining older communities and rural hinterlands that have lost their way. And so we wanted to bring forward a more nuanced and accurate view of the Midwest economy today, but also do the same thing. What would be the most important things that federal, state, and local leaders, public and private, could do to accelerate and spread economic growth and economic opportunity to more people and places in a region that has evolved quite a bit, but just like the nation, some are thriving in a very different global tech knowledge-driven economy. Some are still at sea or being left behind, and we wanted to speak to that and provide kind of a blueprint for action that would accelerate economic growth and opportunity for more people and places in the Midwest.
Most people, if you asked them where are the main centers of economic drivers in the Midwest, people would say, well, the big cities. They would point to the biggest cities, the Chicago's. Your report highlights the fact that actually some of the biggest drivers are not the biggest cities necessarily.
Yeah, I think what we are painting an accurate and pretty clear picture. Today, there is not a monolithic, you know, Midwest or Rust Belt or Heartland agro-industrial center. It's really two Midwests. There are the bigger metro communities that formerly were sort of economically dependent on a particular industry. I mean, Minneapolis-St. Paul was once the flour milling capital of the world, but most of the major metros, including places like Des Moines, including all the way to Pittsburgh, which had collapsed when its steel industry collapsed and is now back and thriving economically, they're more diverse. They're working in a variety of sectors. You know, as the economy has changed from people working in factories and out in rural small towns, they're working in offices and research institutions, and they're working in hospitals, and those are all in city regions, and the economy is sort of urbanizing. So the bigger metros are thriving and diverse, with, I think, Cleveland and Detroit a little slower to evolve given that they face such tremendous collapse. But a second type of community that is thriving in today's talent-driven, you know, innovation-driven economy are all of our leading research university-hubbed communities. And we're blessed with more top-tier research universities that are large and produce talent, knowledge, new ideas. And communities like Iowa City, you know, are among the fastest-growing in both income and population because they're new ideas, talented people congregate and enjoy a wonderful quality of life. I'm in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Ann Arbor is killing it in a global economy. But the more interesting are that we do have more of these older kind of factory and farming communities, that many of which have lost their anchors. And the thing that's probably most interesting about this new report, The Vital Midwest, is that it features the different success paths from many communities that are similarly situated, that you know, we had a place in the old economy, and talks about what some of them have done purposefully and what other assets they have leveraged to find economic success as the kind of older industrial and kind of food processing and farming communities that are sprinkled so liberally around the area.
What's really interesting to me is most people assume that, you know, we talk about the old steel centers, manufacturing centers like Pittsburgh, the old auto centers like Detroit, but most people right now think that, well, manufacturing is no longer got a key role, and it's not thriving as much in the Midwest as it used to, and that's not really true. It's just changed.
Yeah, it's changed, meaning it's high tech. It demands it employs fewer direct workers. You're programming the robot, not, you know, assembling on an assembly line by hand manufactured goods, whether they're, you know, machine tools or automobiles. But it also, you know, the places in our region that are winning in a global economy, among them are many places that manufacture advanced products from the Cummins engines in Columbus, Indiana, a small manufacturing town where they're a leader in global hyper-efficient clean diesel and clean energy engines, and they're, you know, they've got more patents for clean energy technology than almost any community. You see places like Rockford, Illinois, not too far away, that are hugely successful in exporting precision advanced manufacturing goods around the world, and rely on global markets to sell high-tech manufacturing products around the globe. And you see, you know, example after example of you know, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and other parts of the region, they're making, you know, we're making body parts, new bioengineered technologies that, you know, are the new hip that somebody needs that it can be sold for lots of money. You know, is using the same kind of innovation and engineering competencies that we use to make, you know, auto parts and tractors. So there's lots of advanced manufacturing opportunities, but it takes, you know, being on the cutting edge of kind of the new innovative technologies and really not running away from, but pursuing global markets where there's, you know, multi-trillion-dollar business opportunities and growth in, you know, new mobility, smart water technology solutions, clean energy. You know, you're seeing that in Iowa, where smartly Iowa set goals for wind capacity and building out its wind generation. And you see communities, you know, like Adair County that we just showcase in the report. Here's a rural farm community that's benefiting by being the place to deploy wind power, which, you know, and the same is true in my home state of Michigan. Some communities have, you know, kept the family farms because they're now able to generate some income and keep the kind of farm community lifestyle and the kids on the farm because they have a new income stream that also is helping solve global challenges of climate change. It's a pretty good deal.
One of the things I like about this report and most reports that deal with these types of issues is you've got lots of case studies. They're kind of included in little boxes throughout the report where people can look at specific communities that relate to specific strategies. You've mentioned a couple of them, Rockford, Adair County, Iowa, several others. But for those interested out there, if you go to the Chicago Council for Global Affairs website and just Google that and look for a Vital Midwest report or John Austin, you'll find it one of several ways, and I think folks would find it very interesting. One of the things you talk about I thought that was interesting was the role of leadership. And we can't emphasize this enough, where leaders, whether at the federal, state, or local level, really it's particular skill sets and vision that they need to have to kind of move the community forward to take advantage of these opportunities.
Yeah, and I guess at the broadest view, you know, another reason we wanted to do this report is that we kind of wanted to provide, and the leaders in the region, the Chicago Council on Global Affairs was created 100 years ago at a moment when there was concern after World War I and then entering the Depression that, you know, maybe we should pull back from the world, that there was a round of protectionism, let's retreat from the international community, there was nativism in the air, you know, let's be fearful of immigrants, and the Chicago Council itself was organized to provide kind of an affirmative, positive, no, we need to learn more, we need to engage more, we need to be successful in the world, and that's the better positive path, and that's what we wanted to provide as kind of a positive alternative to the forces of kind of economic nostalgia, let's bring back the good old days, and the forces of protectionism and nativism that is looking to fault someone, others, for our economic challenges. No, we can solve our economic challenges, and I think you're right. The report has lots of examples of communities that have organized around their own strategies to succeed and win in a different economy, and it's by looking outward, and it's by winning in global trade. It's by, you know, leading in the economy of tomorrow, which is a lot about sustainable solutions in food and water and energy and mobility and embracing clean energy. I'm going to give you two examples of, you know, leadership that matters. I already did one. You know, a state can step up and say, we're going to be a green, and I say blue economy because solving water problems is huge. We're going to be a leader in that. We're going to set goals, and that drives the business, you know, the business community can innovate and make money, you know, installing, selling, producing new energy-efficient and water-efficient buildings, appliances, technologies. Grand Rapids, Michigan, in my home area, is a great example of where the community leadership stepped up and has done this on their own. They were a traditional, you know, furniture-making and auto parts manufacturing community, very conservative. I mean, this is West Michigan, very conservative Republican, but their business leaders stepped up and did a number of things, saying, you know, let's grow our footprint of medical research institutions, and they put their own money in, and now they have a medical mile of cancer research and hospitals and teaching hospitals, because they then went to Lansing and said, Republican legislators, give us what we need in Grand Rapids. They set goals for reducing their carbon footprint, their water use, and for providing new mobility, public transportation to help get people out of cars and buses here in Michigan. Imagine that. And so they're one of the greenest mid-sized cities in the country. They are. They got an award, and they're viewed as a sustainable leader in solving global challenges, and that is making them attractive to young people who want to be participating in that type of work and working in companies that are committed to it. Otherwise, they will leave Michigan and leave Grand Rapids and go to, you know, Chicago or Seattle or someplace where they can help work on big problems of solving climate change and providing new health solutions for the world. So it's you're making a value statement as a community when you are embracing change, when you're doing the work of tomorrow, just as we invented the work of yesterday in our great industries in food processing, farming, and manufacturing that really powered the world. And now we, as we point out in the report, we really have the innovation horsepower and the talent base and really wonderful, attractive, historic communities with great bones that we can be the center and a choice center for doing the work of tomorrow, creating new good jobs that pay well to replace the ones that we've lost in our traditional industries and, you know, be a wonderful lifestyle community place to live if we do the things to kind of clean up messes we made from the industrial economy and elevate our assets of, you know, history, place, architecture. And it's a hell of a lot cheaper. Excuse my French. It's cheaper in many of our communities than it is on the coast where you can't afford, you know, a room.
That's right. You're listening to Heartland Politics on KBUR-AM-FM. Burlington, Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And today I'm pleased to have on my friend John Austin, who is the author of a recent report called A Vital Midwest, The Path to a New Prosperity. It's published by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, where John is a fellow, and he's also a fellow at Brookings Institution and former head of the Michigan Economics Center. We've been talking a little bit about this report, generally what's in it, the value of it for not just leaders, business, private sector leaders, but for people that are interested in seeing case studies of how other areas of the Midwest are getting ahead in this new global economy. And you talk in here, and Richard Longworth, our friend, also wrote an op-ed in the Quad City newspaper a while back about the two Midwests. Some areas that are thriving, that have emerged from the Great Recession doing very well, others that are still struggling a bit. And I think that fairly, to be fair, describes Burlington, where we're here on the show. I think it describes like Janesville, Wisconsin, Galesburg, Illinois, former factory, big factory towns that have struggled since those factories have shut down or reduced their imprint. But this report provides some areas of perhaps avenues of moving on and building on perhaps that past or going in other areas to build a better economy for the future. Can you maybe talk about some other examples, John, for our listeners in the Burlington area that would be interested in how cities with the heritage that you've talked about, the factory towns, how they can possibly get ahead?
And as I indicated, the bigger metropolitan communities are probably going to evolve fine, and they already are, even in our region where some of them used to be really struggling, and now, because that's kind of where today's economy happens, the university towns that have particularly a major research university. So universities, regional universities, can be an important fulcrum in communities that have an outpost. I'll talk about Kalamazoo, Michigan in a minute because it's kind of a classic, lost its anchors, mid-sized, 100,000-person, older industrial city that, you know, doesn't have a major research university. But places like Green Bay, Wisconsin, and others that have a regional university affiliate, it's a real help. We have more of the pattern of our growth was a lot of small and medium-sized factory towns and food processing communities sprinkled amidst the cornfields and the forests of the upper Midwest. And so I think the report tries to illustrate some of the different paths by which similarly situated communities, small and medium-sized, that lost their big anchor employers have found a path. So obviously some have unique natural assets that are just unrivaled or hard to mimic if you don't have them. If you're on a great lake, it's just such a spectacular location if you clean up your waterfront and reconnect to it, or if you're on a riverfront, and that's, you know, an opportunity for many of the river communities, because the lifestyle advantage of living in a historic community with a great quality of life where you can get outdoors, where you can go recreate and just enjoy kind of a special feel. Marquette, Michigan, Duluth, Minnesota. We feature Ashtabula, Ohio on Lake Erie, which is an old manufacturing town, but they've cleaned up the mess, redeveloped their little downtown. It's more than tourism. People are choosing to live, and Traverse City, Michigan has been at this for a long time, to live in a community with a great lifestyle. And so professionals can work year-round if you're wired. Wiring those communities is important. You can have your own tech startup and get raised VC dollars and live in a beautiful place if you're wired in. So that's, you know, there's some natural advantages in historic towns and communities that are celebrating and elevating their particular history or their art or their culture as a marketing asset. You've got to, work with what you've got. A place like Kalamazoo, which is sort of a classic, it lost its paper mills a long time ago. It had two, Upjohn, it was the invention of Upjohn Company, which was a pharmaceutical maker, in fact invented like the pill that you can swallow. That's, you know, we have so many stories of the innovation that built our communities. So Kalamazoo lost Upjohn, which Pfizer had bought, 40,000 people, their anchor employer like 15 years ago, gone. And they were losing middle-class families to their school district for the suburbs, the few that remain. But they had some inspired leadership, and they said, okay, what have we got to work with? Let's keep some of the biotech talent that's just got dumped out of Pfizer. Let's help them start new biotech and pharma startups and grow them. They remade their downtown, which was, you know, not rather emptied for walkability, livability. They subsidized the public sector Bell's Brewery, which is one of the best craft brewers. I mean, we're biased here, but if you like Oberon or Two Hearted or ever had it, it's hard not to like. So they remade their downtown. But the main thing they did is said, look, let's mark ourselves as a community that cares about education. Private sector donors said, we're going to guarantee if you go to the Kalamazoo School District and graduate, you will have free university education anywhere in Michigan. And that has worked to not only get people better educated, but it's an economic development strategy to say, we're going to be the best educated community. That's a signal to employers. It also has reversed. Now, middle-class families are moving into Kalamazoo, so you're, in essence, revitalizing your city by people wanting to live there. And you're marking yourself as a higher education talent generating community, which has all sorts of synergistic and halo effects for your community. So that's, you know, that's their story. Other communities have done different things. I talk about Grand Rapids leveraging some of their both place and innovation assets. We've got communities where the anchor employer has stayed on that cutting edge, has stayed on the innovations in the sectors that are emerging of tomorrow. I think we feature in the report, I haven't been there, but I want to go to Decorah, Iowa, which, you know, the whole food industry is changing, the whole marketplace. There's new specialty products. There's niche food. There's local food. There's, you know, foodie tourism. And Decorah, I gather, is kind of building all that, including, I don't even know what a pizza farm is, but you've got it, and wineries and breweries. And here's a, you know, we all these changes in the food market and the marketplace and the customer demands for different things, not big commodity produced, you know, cereals like we used to make, has driven now for the first time after 100 years, starting 5 years ago, there are now more people actually working as farmers in America than there were 5 years ago. It reversed a 100-year decline of the actual number of farmers through, you know, bigger farms and automation. So because the market's changed, so there's real opportunity to be a kind of new food, specialty food, local food, organic food destination, particularly if, like, food is your business, and still produce, you know, still produce commodities, but still produce, you know, new niche products that are in your supermarkets that are in demand. So there's lots of examples in the report of different ways different communities have leveraged their particular assets that aren't the big, you know, metros and aren't, you know, the University of Iowa, because there's only one of those, you know, in each state. That's a huge, giant global research institution. But we've got more of them than anybody, so that's actually, and they're sprinkled a bit around the Midwest. So there's a real asset, and it's probably one of the most powerful assets we have.
Yeah, I remember the time, and I'm old enough to remember, when every city's economic development strategy was to go lure a big manufacturer to provide 4,000 or 5,000 jobs. And, of course, that just doesn't happen anymore. And what you're saying is basically, instead of looking outside, look inside, look at your local community assets and build out from there. Is there, as we close up here, John, is there like a systematic plan that most of these successful cities have used, a process to kind of identify those and then build out from?
I think the systematic plan is that the ones that have succeeded, they've had leadership, public, private, locally, that has run a plan, you know, that has looked thoughtfully and collectively and strategically at, you know, what have we got to work with? And then, you know, make a plan and execute on it and work together to execute on it. Every community is different. Every community's plan is going to be different. I think what we're offering in the report are, you know, there's some inspiring examples of the way many communities have leveraged their particular position. The path to new economic success is not by luring in an employer. It's by being a place where your current employers and your current residents are doing the work that's competitive in the world, and where you are a community that has attributes that attract people, not chase them away, including, you know, attractive community that people want to live in, or whatever your unique history, arts, culture, employer base that's still, you know, forward-leaning and competitive, and servicing them with, you know, training the workers. Georgetown, Kentucky's, you know, a middle-tier community. They decide we're going to be the best at, like, providing the skilled workforce that employers need and organizing our community around, you know, skill building for our employers, and they're succeeding. And in our report, the success means these communities are actually have growing incomes and higher incomes than other communities around them. And by some, you know, defensible metrics, they're finding economic success, and their residents are. And, you know, the final thing I'll say is if we do that, we're going to help kind of heal our polarized politics, because we're also seeing that when communities are thriving and residents are feeling okay about their future, or at least, you know, they're optimistic about their future, and they're not as anxious and even, you know, understandably angry, like, you know, our community isn't what it used to be. And so it can bring us together as a society when we accelerate opportunity for more people who may be feeling left behind in a changing world and a changing economy.
Amen to that. If it brings us together to work together locally, I think that's a great thing. A lot of suggestions here, too, and we've run out of time, unfortunately. There's recommendations on federal, state, and local policy initiatives for officials to do some of the things that have been done elsewhere. I think these are the best types of reports, and that it builds off of successful strategies, heavy on case studies, and new ideas. So, again, this is available if you Google. Well, if you go to thechicagocouncil.org, the Chicago Council is all one word, you'll find this report. Again, it's called A Vital Midwest, The Path to a New Prosperity. Excellent work, John. I'm sorry we didn't get to more, but I'll have you back at some point, and we'll continue this discussion on this very important topic. John Austin has been our guest today, the author of this report. He's also a fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and the Brookings Institution. John, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you and your listeners for tuning in.